aging eyes were troubled with a reflection of the long past. Assassination isn't the way out, Devers. I once tried it under provocation when I was 20, but it solved nothing. I removed a villain from Siwenna, but not the Imperial yoke. And it was the Imperial yoke and not the villain that mattered. But Rios is not just a villain, Doc. He's the whole blamed army. It would fall apart without him. They hang on him like babies. The sergeant out there slobbers every time he mentions him. Even so, there are other armies and other leaders. You must go deeper. There is this Brodrig, for instance. No one more than he has the ear of the Emperor. He could demand hundreds of ships where Rios must struggle with 10. I know him by reputation. That's so? What about him? The traitor's eyes lost in frustration what they gained in sharp interest. You want a pocket outline? He's a low-born rascal who has, by unfailing flattery, tickled the whims of the Emperor. He's well hated by the court aristocracy, vermin themselves, because he can lay claim to neither family nor humility. He is the Emperor's advisor in all things, and the Emperor's tool in the worst things. He is faithless by choice, but loyal by necessity. There is not a man in the Empire as subtle in villainy or as crude in his pleasures, and they say there is no way to the Emperor's favor but through him, and no way to his but through infamy. Wow! Devers pulled thoughtfully at his neatly trimmed beard. And he's the old boy the Emperor sent out here to keep an eye on Rios. Do you know, I have an idea.
I do now.
Suppose this Brodrig takes a dislike to our young army's delight.
He probably has already. He's not noted for a capacity for liking.
Suppose it gets really bad. The Emperor might hear about it, and Rios might be in trouble.
Uh-huh. Quite likely. But how do you propose to get that to happen?
I don't know. I suppose he could be bribed.
The patrician laughed gently.
Yes, in a way. But not in the manner you bribed the sergeant, not with a pocket freezer. And even if you reach his scale, it wouldn't be worth it. There's probably no one so easily bribed, but he lacks even the fundamental honesty of honorable corruption. He doesn't stay bribed, not for any sum. Think of something else.
Devers swung a leg over his knee, and his toe nodded quickly and restlessly.
It's the first hint, though.
He stopped. The door signal was flashing once again, and the sergeant was on the threshold once more. He was excited, and his broad face was red and unsmiling.
"Sir," he began, in an agitated attempt at deference, "I am very thankful for the freezer, and you have always spoken to me very fine, although I am only the son of a farmer, and you are great lords."
His Pleiades accent had grown thick, almost too much so for easy comprehension, and with excitement his lumpish peasant derivation wiped out completely the soldierly bearing so long and so painfully cultivated.
Barr said softly, "What is it, Sergeant?"
"Lord Brodrig is coming to see you. Tomorrow. I know because the captain told me to have my men ready for dress review tomorrow for him. I thought I might warn you."
Barr said, "Thank you, Sergeant. We appreciate that. But it's all right, man. No need for—"
But the look on Sergeant Look's face was now unmistakably one of fear. He spoke in a rough whisper,
"You don't hear the stories the men tell about him. He has sold himself to the space fiend. No, don't laugh. There are most terrible tales told about him. They say he has men with blast guns who follow him everywhere, and when he wants pleasure, he just tells them to blast down anyone they meet. And they do. And he laughs. They say even the Emperor is in terror of him, and that he forces the Emperor to raise taxes and won't let him listen to the complaints of the people. And he hates the general. That's what they say. They say he would like to kill the general because the general is so great and wise. But he can't, because our general is a match for anyone, and he knows Lord Broderick is a bad un. The sergeant blinked, smiled in a sudden incongruous shyness at his own outburst, and backed toward the door. He nodded his head jerkily. You mind my words. Watch him. He ducked out. And Devers looked up, hard-eyed. This breaks things our way, doesn't it, Doc? It depends, said Barr dryly, on Broderick, doesn't it? But Devers was thinking, not listening. He was thinking hard. Lord Broderick ducked his head as he stepped into the cramped living quarters of the trading ship, and his two armed guards followed quickly with bared guns and the professionally hard scowls of the hired bravos. The Privy Secretary had little of the look of the lost soul about him just then. If the space fiend had bought him, he had left no visible mark of possession. Rather might Broderick have been considered a breath of court fashion come to enliven the hard, bare ugliness of an army base. The stiff, tight lines of his sheened and immaculate costume gave him the illusion of height, from the very top of which his cold, emotionless eyes stared down the declivity of a long nose at the trader. The mother-of-pearl ruches at his wrists fluttered filmily as he brought his ivory stick to the ground before him and leaned upon it daintily. No, he said with a little gesture, you remain here. Forget your toys. I am not interested in them. He drew forth a chair, dusted it carefully with the iridescent square of fabric attached to the top of his white stick, and seated himself. Devers glanced towards the mate to the chair, but Broderick said lazily, you will stand in the presence of a peer of the realm. He smiled. Devers shrugged. If you're not interested in my stock in trade, what am I here for? The Privy Secretary waited coldly, and Devers added a slow, sir. For privacy, said the Secretary. Now, is it likely that I would come 200 parsecs through space to inspect trinkets? It's you I want to see. He extracted a small pink tablet from an engraved box and placed it delicately between his teeth. He sucked it slowly and appreciatively. For instance, he said, who are you? Are you really a citizen of this barbarian world that is creating all this fury of military frenzy? Devers nodded gravely. And you were really captured by him after the beginning of this squabble he calls a war? I am referring to our young general. Devers nodded again. So, very well, my worthy outlander. I see your fluency of speech is at a minimum. I shall smooth the way for you. It seems that our general here is fighting an apparently meaningless war with frightful transports of energy, and this over a forsaken flea-bite of a world at the end of nowhere, which to a logical man would not seem worth a single blast of a single gun. Yet the general is not illogical. On the contrary, I would say he was extremely intelligent. Do you follow me?
Can't say I do, sir.
The secretary inspected his fingernails and said, listen further, then. The general would not waste his men and ships on a sterile feat of glory.
I know he talks of glory and of imperial honor, but it is quite obvious that the affectation of being one of the insufferable old demigods of the heroic age won't wash. There is something more than glory here, and he does take queer, unnecessary care of you. Now, if you were my prisoner and told me as little of use as you have our general, I would slit open your abdomen and strangle you with your own intestines. Devers remained wooden. His eyes moved slightly, first to one of the secretary's bully boys and then to the other. They were ready, eagerly ready. The secretary smiled. Well, now, you're a silent devil. According to the general, even a psychic probe made no impression, and that was a mistake on his part, by the way, for it convinced me that our young military whizbang was lying. He seemed in high humor. My honest tradesman, he said, I have a psychic probe of my own, one that ought to suit you peculiarly well. You see this? And between thumb and forefinger, held negligently, were intricately designed pink and yellow rectangles, which were most definitely obvious in identity. Devers said so. It looks like cash, he said. Cash it is, and the best cash of the Empire, for it is backed by my estates, which are more extensive than the Emperor's own. 100,000 credits. All here, between two fingers. Yours. For what, sir? I am a good trader, but all trades go in both directions. For what? For the truth. What is the general after? Why is he fighting this war? Lathan Devers sighed and smoothed his beard thoughtfully. What he's after? His eyes were following the motions of the secretary's hands as he counted the money slowly, bill by bill. In a word, the Empire. How ordinary. It always comes to that in the end, but how? What is the road that leads from the galaxy's edge to the peak of Empire so broadly and invitingly? The Foundation, said Devers bitterly, has secrets. They have books, old books, so old that the language they are in is only known to a few of the top men. But the secrets are shrouded in ritual and religion, and none may use them. I tried, and now I am here. And there is a death sentence waiting for me there.
I see.
And these old secrets. Come. For 100,000, I deserve the intimate details. The transmutation of elements, said Devers shortly. The secretary's eyes narrowed and lost some of their detachment. I have been told that practical transmutation is impossible by the laws of nucleics. So it is, if nuclear forces are used. But the ancients were smart boys. There are sources of power greater than the nuclei and more fundamental. If the Foundation used those sources as I suggested, Devers felt a soft, creeping sensation in his stomach. The bait was dangling. The fish was nosing it. The secretary said suddenly, "Continue." The general, I am sure, is aware of all this. But what does he intend doing once he finishes this opera bouffe affair? Devers kept his voice rock steady. With transmutation, he controls the economy of the whole setup of your empire. Mineral holdings won't be worth a sneeze when Rios can make tungsten out of aluminum and iridium out of iron. An entire production system based on the scarcity of certain elements and the abundance of others is thrown completely out of whack. There'll be the greatest disjointment the Empire has ever seen, and only Rios will be able to stop it. And there is the question of this new power I mentioned, the use of which won't give Rios religious heebies. There's nothing that can stop him now. He's got the Foundation by the back of the neck, and once he's finished with it, he'll be Emperor in 2 years. So, Broderick laughed lightly. Iridium out of iron? That's what you said, isn't it? Come. I'll tell you a state secret. Do you know that the Foundation has already been in communication with the General? Dever's back stiffened. You look surprised. Why not? It seems logical now. They offered him 100 tons of iridium a year to make peace. 100 tons of iron converted to iridium in violation of their religious principles to save their necks. Fair enough. But no wonder our rigidly incorruptible general refused, when he can have the iridium and the Empire as well. And poor Cleon called him his one honest general. My bewhiskered merchant, you have earned your money. He tossed it, and Devers scrambled after the flying bills. Lord Broderick stopped at the door and turned. One reminder, traitor. My playmates with the guns here have neither middle ears, tongues, education, nor intelligence. They can neither hear, speak, write, nor even make sense to a psychic probe. But they are very expert at interesting executions. I have bought you, man, at 100,000 credits. You will be good and worthy merchandise. Should you forget that you are bought at any time and attempt to, say, repeat our conversation to Rios, you will be executed, but executed my way. And in that delicate face there were sudden hard lines of eager cruelty that changed the studied smile into a red-lipped snarl. For one fleeting second, Devers saw that space fiend who had bought his buyer look out of his buyer's eyes. Silently he preceded the two thrusting blast guns of Broderick's playmates to his quarters. And to Dukembar's question he said with brooding satisfaction, "No, that's the queerest part of it. He bribed me." 2 months of difficult war had left their mark on Bel Rios. There was heavy-handed gravity about him, and he was short-tempered. It was with impatience that he addressed the worshipping Sergeant Luke. "Wait outside, soldier, and conduct these men back to their quarters when I am through. No one is to enter until I call. No one at all, you understand." The sergeant saluted himself stiffly out of the room, and Rios, with muttered disgust, scooped up the waiting papers on his desk, threw them into the top drawer, and slammed it shut. "Take seats," he said shortly to the waiting two. "I haven't much time. Strictly speaking, I shouldn't be here at all, but it is necessary to see you." He turned to Dukembar, whose long fingers were caressing with interest the crystal cube in which was set the simulacrum of the lined, austere face of His Imperial Majesty, Cleon II. "In the first place, patrician," said the general, "your Selden is losing. To be sure, he battles well, for these men of the Foundation swarm like senseless bees and fight like madmen. Every planet is defended viciously, and once taken, every planet heaves so with rebellion it is as much trouble to hold as to conquer. But they are taken and they are held. Your Selden is losing." "But he has not yet lost," murmured Barr politely. "The Foundation itself retains less optimism. They offer me millions in order that I may not put this Selden to the final test.
So rumor goes.
Ah, is rumor preceding me? Does it prate also of the latest?
What is the latest?
Why, that Lord Brodrig, the darling of the Emperor, is now second in command at his own request.
Devers spoke for the first time.
At his own request, boss? How come? Or are you growing to like the fellow?
He chuckled.
Rio said calmly, no, can't say I do. It's just that he bought the office at what I considered a fair and adequate price.
Such as?
Such as a request to the Emperor for reinforcements.
Devers' contemptuous smile broadened.
He has communicated with the Emperor, huh? And I take it, boss, you're just waiting for these reinforcements, but they'll come any day, right?
Wrong. They have already come. 5 ships of the line, smooth and strong, with a personal message of congratulations from the Emperor, and more ships on the way.
What's wrong, traitor? He asked sardonically.
Devers spoke through suddenly frozen lips.
Nothing.
Rio strode out from behind his desk and faced the traitor, hand on the butt of his blast gun.
I say, what's wrong, traitor? The news would seem to disturb you. Surely you have no sudden birth of interest in the Foundation.
I haven't.
Yes. There are queer points about you.
That's so, boss.
Devers smiled tightly and balled the fists in his pockets. Just you line them up and I'll knock them down for you.
Here they are.
You were caught easily. You surrendered at first blow with a burnt-out shield. You're quite ready to desert your world, and that without a price.
Interesting, all this, isn't it?
I crave to be on the winning side, boss. I'm a sensible man. You called me that yourself.
Rio said with tight throatiness, granted.
Yet no traitor since has been captured. No trade ship but has had the speed to escape at choice. No trade ship but has had a screen that could take all the beating a light cruiser could give it, should it choose to fight. And no traitor but has fought to death when occasion warranted. Traitors have been traced as the leaders and instigators of the guerrilla warfare on occupied planets and of the flying raids in occupied space.
Are you the only sensible man, then?
You neither fight nor flee, but turn traitor without urging.
You are unique, amazingly unique.
In fact, suspiciously unique.
Devers said softly, I take your meaning, but you have nothing on me.
I've been here now 6 months, and I've been a good boy.
So you have, and I have repaid you by good treatment. I have left your ship undisturbed and treated you with every consideration. Yet you fall short.
Freely offered information, for instance, on your gadgets might have been helpful. The atomic principles on which they are built would seem to be used in some of the Foundation's nastiest weapons.
Right?
I am only a traitor, said Devers, and not one of these bigwig technicians. I sell this stuff. I don't make it.
Well, that will be seen shortly. It is what I came here for.
For instance, your ship will be searched for a personal force shield. You have never worn one, yet all soldiers of the Foundation do. It will be significant evidence that there is information you do not choose to give me.
Right?
There was no answer. He continued, and there will be more direct evidence. I have brought with me the psychic probe. It failed once before, but contact with the enemy is a liberal education. His voice was smoothly threatening, and Devers felt the gun thrust hard in his midriff. The general's gun, hitherto in its holster. The general said quietly, "You will remove your wristband and any other metal ornament you wear and give them to me. Slowly. Atomic fields can be distorted, you see, and psychic probes might probe only into static." "That's right. I'll take it." The receiver on the general's desk was glowing, and a message capsule clicked into the slot, near which Barr stood and still held the trimensional Imperial bust. Rios stepped behind his desk with his blast gun held ready. He said to Barr, "You too, Patrician. Your wristband condemns you. You have been helpful earlier, however, and I am not vindictive. But I shall judge the fate of your behostaged family by the results of the psychic probe." And as Rios leaned over to take out the message capsule, Barr lifted the crystal-enveloped bust of Cleon and quietly and methodically brought it down upon the general's head. It happened too suddenly for Devers to grasp. It was as if a sudden demon had grown into the old man. "Out," said Barr in a tooth-clenched whisper. "Quickly." He seized Rios's dropped blaster and buried it in his blouse. Sergeant Luke turned as they emerged from the narrowest possible crack of the door. Barr said easily, "Lead on, Sergeant." Devers closed the door behind him. Sergeant Luke led in silence to their quarters and then, with the briefest pause, continued onward, for there was the nudge of a blast gun muzzle in his ribs and a hard voice in his ears which said, "To the trade ship." Devers stepped forward to open the airlock, and Barr said, "Stand where you are, Luke. You've been a decent man, and we're not going to kill you." But the sergeant recognized the monogram on the gun. He cried in choked fury, "You've killed the general!" With a wild, incoherent yell, he charged blindly upon the blasting fury of the gun and collapsed in blasted ruin. The trade ship was rising above the dead planet before the signal lights began their eerie blink, and against the creamy cobweb of the great lens in the sky, which was the galaxy, other black forms rose. Devers said grimly, "Hold tight, Barr, and let's see if they've got a ship that can match my speed." He knew they hadn't. And once in open space, the trader's voice seemed lost and dead as he said, "The line I fed Broderick was a little too good. It seems as if he's thrown in with the general." Swiftly they raced into the depths of the star mass that was the galaxy. Chapter 8. To Trantor. Devers bent over the little dead globe, watching for a tiny sign of life. The directional control was slowly and thoroughly sieving space with its jabbing, tight sheaf of signals. Barr watched patiently from his seat on the low cot in the corner. He asked, "No more signs of them?" "The Empire boys? No." The traitor growled the words with evident impatience. "We lost the scuppers long ago." "Space. With the blind jumps we took through hyperspace, it's lucky we didn't land up in a sun's belly. They couldn't have followed us even if they outranged us, which they didn't." He sat back and loosened his collar with a jerk. "I don't know what those Empire boys have done here. I think some of the gaps are out of alignment." "I take it then you're trying to get to the Foundation." "I'm calling the Association, or trying to." "The Association? Who were they?" "Association of Independent Traders." "Never heard of it, huh? Well, you're not alone. We haven't made our splash yet." For a while there was a silence that centered about the unresponsive reception indicator, and Barr said, "Are you within range?" "I don't know. I haven't but a small notion where we are, going by dead reckoning. That's why I have to use directional control. It could take years, you know."
"Might it?"
Barr pointed, and Devers jumped and adjusted his earphones. Within the little murky sphere, there was a tiny glowing whiteness. For half an hour, Devers nursed the fragile, groping thread of communication that reached through hyperspace to connect two points that laggard light would take 500 years to bind together. Then he sat back, hopelessly. He looked up and shoved the earphones back.
Let's eat, Doc. There's a needle shower you can use if you want to, but go easy on the hot water.
He squatted before one of the cabinets that lined one wall and felt through the contents.
You're not a vegetarian, I hope.
Barr said, I'm omnivorous.
But what about the association? Have you lost them?
Looks so. It was extreme range, a little too extreme.
Doesn't matter, though. I got all that counted.
He straightened and placed the two metal containers upon the table.
Just give it 5 minutes, Doc, then slit it open by pushing the contact. It'll be plate, food, and fork. Sort of handy for when you're in a hurry, if you're not interested in such incidentals as napkins. I suppose you want to know what I got out of the association?
If it isn't a secret.
Devers shook his head.
Not to you. What Rios said was true.
About the offer of tribute.
Uh-huh. They offered it and had it refused.
Things are bad. There's fighting in the Outer Suns of Loris.
Loris is close to the Foundation.
Huh?
Oh, you wouldn't know. It's one of the original four kingdoms. You might call it part of the inner line of defense.
That's not the worst. They've been fighting large ships previously never encountered, which means Rios wasn't giving us the works. He has received more ships. Broderick has switched sides, and I have messed things up.
His eyes were bleak as he joined the food container contact points and watched it fall open neatly. The stew-like dish steamed its aroma through the room. Duke and Barr was already eating.
So much, said Barr, for improvisations, then.
We can't do nothing here. We cannot cut through the Imperial lines to return to the Foundation. We can do nothing but that which is most sensible. To wait patiently. However, if Rios has reached the inner line, I trust the wait will not be too long.
Endeavors put down his fork.
Wait, is it? He snarled, glowering. That's all right for you. You've got nothing at stake.
Haven't I? Barr smiled thinly.
No.
In fact, I'll tell you.
Devers' irritation skimmed the surface. I'm tired of looking at this whole business as if it were an interesting something or other on a microscope slide. I've got friends somewhere out there dying, and a whole world out there, my home, dying also. You're an outsider. You don't know.
I have seen friends die.
The old man's hands were limp in his lap, and his eyes were closed.
Are you married?
Devers said, traitors don't marry.
Well, I have two sons and a nephew. They have been warned, but for reasons they could take no action. Our escape means their death. My daughter and my two grandchildren have, I hope, left the planet safely before this, but even excluding them, I have already risked and lost more than you.
Devers was morosely savage. I know, but that was a matter of choice. You might have played ball with Rios. I never asked you to...
Barr shook his head.
It was not a matter of choice, Devers. Make your conscience free. I didn't risk my sons for you. I cooperated with Rios as long as I dared. But there was the psychic probe.
The Sewenian patrician opened his eyes, and they were sharp with pain. Rios came to me once. It was over a year ago. He spoke of a cult centering about magicians, but missed the truth. It is not quite a cult. You see, it is 40 years now that Sowena has been gripped in the same unbearable vice that threatens your world. 5 revolts have been ground out. Then I discovered the ancient records of Harry Seldon. And now this cult waits. It waits for the coming of the magicians, and for that day it is ready. My sons are leaders of those who wait. It is that secret which is in my mind and which the probe must never touch. And so they must die as hostages, for the alternative is their death as rebels, and half of Sowena with them. You see, I had no choice, and I am no outsider. Devers' eyes fell, and Barr continued softly, "It is on a Foundation victory that Sowena's hopes depend. It is for a Foundation victory that my sons are sacrificed. And Harry Seldon does not pre-calculate the inevitable salvation of Sowena as he does that of the Foundation. I have no certainty for my people, only hope. But you were still satisfied to wait, even with the Imperial Navy at Loras. I would wait, in perfect confidence, said Barr, simply, if they had landed on the planet Terminus itself. The traitor frowned hopelessly. I don't know. It can't really work like that. Not just like magic. Psychohistory or not, they're terribly strong, and we're weak. What can Seldon do about it? There's nothing to do. It's all already done. It's proceeding now. Because you don't hear the wheels turning and the gongs beating doesn't mean it's any the less certain. Maybe. But I wish you had cracked Rios's skull for keeps. He's more the enemy than all his army. Cracked his skull? With Broderick, his second in command? Barr's face sharpened with hate. All Sowena would have been my hostage. Broderick has proven his worth long since. There exists a world which 5 years ago lost 1 male in every 10, and simply for failure to meet outstanding taxes. This same Broderick was the tax collector. No. Rios may live. His punishments are mercy in comparison. But 6 months... 6 months in the enemy base with nothing to show for it. Devers' strong hands clasped each other tautly so that his knuckles cracked. Nothing to show for it! Well now, wait. You remind me. Barr fumbled in his pouch. You might want to count this. And he tossed the small sphere of metal on the table. Devers snatched it. What is it? The message capsule. The one the Rios received just before I jacked him. Does that count as something? I don't know. Depends on what's in it. Devers sat down and turned it over carefully in his hand. When Barr stepped from his cold shower and, gratefully, into the mild, warm current of the air dryer, he found Devers silent and absorbed at the workbench. The Sowenian slapped his body with a sharp rhythm and spoke above the punctuating sounds. What are you doing? Devers looked up. Droplets of perspiration glittered in his beard. I'm going to open this capsule. Can you open it without Rios's personal characteristic? There was mild surprise in the Sowenian's voice. If I can't, I'll resign from the association and never skipper a ship for what's left of my life. I've got a 3-way electronic analysis of the interior now, and I've got little jiggers that the Empire never heard of.
especially made for jimmying capsules. I've been a burglar before this, you know. A traitor has to be something of everything. He bent low over the little sphere, and a small, flat instrument probed delicately and sparked redly at each fleeting contact. He said, "This capsule is a crude job, anyway. These Imperial boys are no shakes at this small work. I can see that. Ever see a Foundation capsule? It's half the size and impervious to electronic analysis in the first place." And then he was rigid, the shoulder muscles beneath his tunic tautening visibly. His tiny probe pressed slowly. It was noiseless when it came, but Devers relaxed and sighed. In his hand was the shining sphere with its message unrolled like a parchment tongue. "It's from Broderick," he said. Then, with contempt, "The message medium is permanent. In a Foundation capsule, the message would be oxidized to gas within a minute." But Duke and Barr waved him silent. He read the message quickly. "From Amel Broderick, Envoy Extraordinary of His Imperial Majesty, Privy Secretary of the Council and Peer of the Realm. To Bel Rios, Military Governor of Suenna, General of the Imperial Forces and Peer of the Realm. I greet you. Planet number 1120 no longer resists. The plans of offense, as outlined, continue smoothly. The enemy weakens visibly, and the ultimate ends in view will surely be gained." Barr raised his head from the almost microscopic print and cried bitterly, "The fool! The forsaken, blasted fop! That a message?" "Huh?" said Devers. He was vaguely disappointed. "It says nothing," ground out Barr. "Our lick-spittle courtier is playing at general now. With Rios away, he is the field commander and must soothe his paltry spirit by spewing out his pompous reports concerning military affairs he has nothing to do with. So-and-so planet no longer resists. The offensive moves on. The enemy weakens. The vacuum-headed peacock." "Well, now, wait a minute. Hold on. Throw it away." The old man turned away in mortification. "The galaxy knows I never expected it to be world-shakingly important, but in wartime it is reasonable to assume that even the most routine order left undelivered might hamper military movements and lead to complications later. It's why I snatched it. But this, better to have left it. It would have wasted a minute of Rios' time that will now be put to more constructive use." But Devers had arisen. "Will you hold on and stop throwing your weight around? For Selden's sake." He held out the sliver of message before Barr's nose. "Now read that again. What does he mean by ultimate ends in view?" "The conquest of the Foundation. Well?" "Yes? And maybe he means the conquest of the Empire. You know he believes that to be the ultimate end. And if he does..." "If he does..." Devers' one-sided smile was lost in his beard. "Why, watch, then, and I'll show you." With one finger, the lavishly monogrammed sheet of message parchment was thrust back into its slot. With a soft twang, it disappeared, and the globe was a smooth, unbroken hole again. Somewhere inside was the tiny, oiled whir of the controls as they lost their setting by random movements. "Now there is no known way of opening this capsule without knowledge of Rios's personal characteristic, is there?" "To the Empire, no," said Barr. "Then the evidence it contains is unknown to us and absolutely authentic." "To the Empire, yes," said Barr. "And the Emperor can open it, can't he? Personal characteristics of government officials must be on file. We keep records of our officials at the Foundation."
At the Imperial Capital as well, agreed Barr. Then when you, a Suenian patrician and peer of the realm, tell this Cleon, this emperor, that his favorite tame parrot and his shiniest general are getting together to knock him over, and hand him the capsule as evidence? What will he think Broderick's ultimate ends are?
Barr sat down weakly.
Wait, I don't follow you.
He stroked one thin cheek and said,
You're not really serious, are you?
I am.
Devers was angrily excited. Listen, 9 out of the last 10 emperors got their throats cut or their gizzards blasted out by one or another of their generals with big-time notions in their heads. You told me that yourself more than once. Old man emperor would believe us so fast it would make Rios's head swim.
Barr muttered feebly, He is serious.
For the galaxy's sake, man, you can't beat a Selden crisis by a far-fetched, impractical storybook scheme like that. Suppose you had never got hold of the capsule. Suppose Broderick hadn't used the word ultimate. Selden doesn't depend on wild luck.
If wild luck comes our way, there's no law says Selden can't take advantage of it.
Certainly. But...
Barr stopped, then spoke calmly, but with visible restraint.
Look, in the first place, how will you get to the planet Trantor? You don't know its location in space, and I certainly don't remember the coordinates, to say nothing of the ephemerae. You don't even know your own position in space.
You can't get lost in space, grinned Devers. He was at the controls already.
Down we go to the nearest planet, and back we come with complete bearings and the best navigation charts Broderick's 100,000 smackers can buy.
And a blaster in our belly. Our descriptions are probably in every planet in this quarter of the Empire.
Doc, said Devers patiently, don't be a hick from the sticks.
Rios said my ship surrendered too easily, and brother, he wasn't kidding. This ship has enough firepower and enough juice in its shield to hold off anything we're likely to meet this deep inside the frontier. And we have personal shields, too. The Empire boys never found them, you know. But they weren't meant to be found.
All right, said Barr. All right. Suppose yourself on Trantor. How do you see the Emperor, then? You think he keeps off his hours?
Suppose we worry about that on Trantor, said Devers.
And Barr muttered helplessly, All right again. I've wanted to see Trantor before I die for half a century now. Have your way.
The hypernuclear motor was cut in. The lights flickered, and there was the slight internal wrench that marked the shift into hyperspace.
Chapter 9 On Trantor. The stars were as thick as weeds in an unkempt field, and for the first time Lathan Devers found the figures to the right of the decimal point of prime importance in calculating the cuts through the hyperregions. There was a claustrophobic sensation about the necessity for leaps of not more than a light year. There was a frightening harshness about a sky which glittered unbrokenly in every direction. It was being lost in a sea of radiation. And in the center of an open cluster of 10,000 stars, whose light tore to shreds the feebly encircling darkness, there circled the huge imperial planet, Trantor. But it was more than a planet. It was the living pulse beat of an empire of 20 million stellar systems. It had only one function, administration, one purpose, government, and one manufactured product, law. The entire world was one functional distortion. There was no living object on its surface but man, his pets, and his parasites. No blade of grass or fragment of uncovered soil could be found outside the 100 square miles of the Imperial Palace.
No fresh water outside the palace grounds existed, but in the vast underground cisterns that held the water supply of a world. The lustrous, indestructible, incorruptible metal that was the unbroken surface of the planet was the foundation of the huge metal structures that mazed the planet. They were structures connected by causeways, laced by corridors, cubbyholed by offices, basemented by the huge retail centers that covered square miles, penthoused by the glittering amusement world that sparkled into life each night. One could walk around the world of Trantor and never leave that one conglomerate building, nor see the city. A fleet of ships, greater in number than all the war fleets the Empire had ever supported, landed their cargoes on Trantor each day to feed the 40 billions of humans who gave nothing in exchange but the fulfillment of the necessity of untangling the myriads of threads that spiraled into the central administration of the most complex government humanity had ever known. 20 agricultural worlds were the granary of Trantor. A universe was its servant. Tightly held by the huge metal arms on either side, the trade ship was gently lowered down the huge ramp that led to the hangar. Already Devers had fumed his way through the manifold complications of a world conceived in paperwork and dedicated to the principle of the form in quadruplicate. There had been the preliminary halt in space, where the first of what had grown into 100 questionnaires had been filled out. There were the 100 cross-examinations, the routine administration of a simple probe, the photographing of the ship, the characteristic analysis of the two men, and the subsequent recording of the same, the search for contraband, the payment of the entry tax, and finally the question of the identity cards and visitor's visa. Deucumbar was a Sewenian and subject of the Emperor, but Lathan Devers was an unknown without the requisite documents. The official in charge at the moment was devastated with sorrow, but Devers could not enter. In fact, he would have to be held for official investigation. From somewhere, 100 credits in crisp new bills backed by the estates of Lord Broderick made their appearance and changed hands quietly. The official hemmed importantly, and the devastation of his sorrow was assuaged. A new form made its appearance from the appropriate pigeonhole. It was filled out rapidly and efficiently, with the Devers characteristic thereto formally and properly attached. The two men, trader and patrician, entered Trantor. In the hangar, the trade ship was another vessel to be cached, photographed, recorded, contents noted, identity cards of passengers facsimiled, and for which a suitable fee was paid, recorded, and receipted. And then Devers was on a huge terrace under the bright white sun, along which women chattered, children shrieked, and men sipped drinks languidly and listened to the huge televisors blaring out the news of the Empire. Barr paid a requisite number of iridium coins and appropriated the uppermost member of a pile of newspapers. It was the Trantor Imperial News, official organ of the government. In the back of the newsroom, there was the soft clicking noise of additional editions being printed in long-distance sympathy with the busy machines at the Imperial News offices, 10,000 miles away by corridor, 6,000 by air machine, just as 10 million sets of copies were being likewise printed at that moment in 10 million other newsrooms all over the planet. Barr glanced at the headlines and said softly, "What shall we do first?" Devers tried to shake himself out of his depression. He was in a universe far removed from his own, on a world that weighted him down with its intricacy, among people whose doings were incomprehensible and whose language was nearly so. The gleaming metallic towers that surrounded him and continued onwards in never-ending multiplicity to beyond the horizon oppressed him. The whole busy, unheeding life of a world metropolis cast him into the horrible gloom of isolation and pygmyish unimportance. He said, "I'd better leave it to you, Doc." Barr was calm, low voice. "I tried to tell you, but it's hard to believe without seeing for yourself. I know that. Do you know how many people want to see the Emperor every day? About 1 million.
Do you know how many he sees? About 10. We'll have to work through the civil service, and that makes it harder. But we can't afford the aristocracy. We have almost 100,000. A single peer of the realm would cost us that, and it would take at least 3 or 4 to form an adequate bridge to the Emperor. It may take 50 chief commissioners and senior supervisors to do the same, but they would cost us only 100 apiece, perhaps. I'll do the talking. In the first place, they wouldn't understand your accent, and in the second, you don't know the etiquette of imperial bribery. It's an art, I assure you. Ah. The third page of the Imperial News had what he wanted, and he passed the paper to Devers. Devers read slowly. The vocabulary was strange, but he understood. He looked up, and his eyes were dark with concern. He slapped the news sheet angrily with the back of his hand. You think this can be trusted? Within limits, replied Barr calmly. It's highly improbable that the Foundation fleet was wiped out. They've probably reported that several times already, if they've gone by the usual war reporting technique of a world capital far from the actual scene of fighting. What it means, though, is that Rios has won another battle, which would be none too unexpected. It says he's captured Loras. Is that the capital planet of the Kingdom of Loras? Yes, brooded Devers, or of what used to be the Kingdom of Loras. And it's not 20 parsecs from the Foundation. Doc, we've got to work fast. Barr shrugged. You can't go fast on Trantor. If you try, you'll end up at the point of an atom blaster, most likely. How long will it take? 1 month, if we're lucky. 1 month and our 100,000 credits, if even that will suffice. And that is providing the Emperor does not take it into his head in the meantime to travel to the summer planets, where he sees no petitioners at all. But the Foundation will take care of itself, as heretofore. Come, there's the question of dinner. I'm hungry. And afterwards, the evening is ours, and we may as well use it. We shall never see Trantor or any world like it again, you know. The Home Commissioner of the Outer Provinces spread his pudgy hands helplessly and peered at the petitioners with owlish nearsightedness. But the Emperor is indisposed, gentlemen. It is really useless to take the matter to my superior. His Imperial Majesty has seen no one in 1 week. He will see us, said Barr, with an affectation of confidence. It is but a question of seeing a member of the staff of the Privy Secretary. Impossible, said the Commissioner emphatically. It would be the worth of my job to attempt that. Now, if you could but be more explicit concerning the nature of your business. I'm willing to help you understand, but naturally I want something less vague, something I can present to my superior as reason for taking the matter further. If my business were such that it could be told to any but the highest, suggested Barr smoothly, it would scarcely be important enough to rate audience with His Imperial Majesty. I propose that you take a chance. I might remind you that if His Imperial Majesty attaches the importance to our business, which we guarantee that he will, you will stand certain to receive the honors you will deserve for helping us now. Yes, but, and the Commissioner shrugged wordlessly. It's a chance, agreed Barr. Naturally, a risk should have its compensation. It is a rather great favor to ask you, but we have already been greatly obliged with your kindness in offering us this opportunity to explain our problem. But if you would allow us to express our gratitude just slightly by... Devers scowled. He had heard this speech with its slight variations 20 times in the past month. It ended, as always, in a quick shift of the half-hidden bills.
but the epilogue differed here. Usually the bills vanished immediately. Here they remained in plain view, while slowly the commissioner counted them, inspecting them front and back as he did